and a lot has changed in the industry, you know, computer controlled, and you know, I'm sure, you know, self-driving cars you'll be dealing with or something crazy like that, you know, automated, some kind of automated car.
Self-driving fire truck, that's the day of the fire service, guys.
Yeah.
No matter how bad of a day you have, if you get behind the wheel of a fire truck, it's always a better day. I've never seen anybody frowning driving a fire truck. So.
That's why every kid always wants to be a firefighter, mm-hmm. right? Not a police officer, a firefighter. All right, welcome to 1075 Chatter. I'm here with Mike, Derek, and Nick. Nope, not our Nick, because they're here from Precision Mobile Electronics. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us. Excited.
Glad you guys are here. You know, I know we've known you guys for a while. You're out of Connecticut. Tell us a little bit about your company first, and then we'll get into some other stuff with you.
Yeah, so our parent company, Precision Brakeworks, my dad started in 1983. I've been kicking around the shop since I could basically walk. In 2006, I got involved with the volunteer fire department, and I got a new truck, and you know, I was looking for somebody to upfit it. And, you know, I kept getting kicked around. Nobody took me seriously. I said, how hard could this be? Let me do it myself. You know, I rebuild engines and do all that kind of stuff, you know. So I got involved with it, and I'm like, wow, this is really relaxing. I like doing the wiring, like doing all that kind of stuff. And everybody at the firehouse, you know, hey, can you do my truck? Can you do it?
Yep.
And then it kind of just snowballed from there. And 2 years, I was a one-man show until 2 years ago. Hired Derek, you know, he was in commercial EMS for 13 years. He came on with us full time. We got a additional space, which was awesome. It's, you know, 1,000 feet up the street from our main shop. You know, we moved into there. A year later, we hired Nick, and you know, we're off to the races. And you know, we've basically quadrupled their business, and couldn't do it without, you know, partners like First In. And you know, you guys always have our backs, and you know, that's huge for us.
It's an interesting industry. I've been in it a long time, and you know, you've been dabbling in it a while. So I mean, it's changed a lot over the years. You know, technology's changed a lot. And the other thing that I noticed is we used to get guys that came in, and I was something similar to what, you know, my past. I started way back when people had CB radios, and you know, I got to put a new tape deck in my car because that's what we had back then. No idea what I'm talking about.
At least you didn't say 8-track. I know what an 8-track is because we had them at the firehouse. So I know.
I had an 8-track too. I didn't have one in my car, but I had an 8-track in my house. Yeah. So I was, but I did have cassette tapes, and you know, so you know, that's how I started. The same way. And then there were schools around here. I don't know if you guys had them up in Connecticut, but we had them here. There was like these 12-volt schools where guys would learn to do car alarms and, you know, little things like that. They would usually did the window tint, the car alarms, and then they would do like radios. And they were big for years and years. And now I don't think anybody gets a remote starter, a car alarm. I think the cars come with everything in them that you could want. I mean,
pretty much.
So that kind of died off as an industry. So, I mean, I don't, you know, you're lucky that you have, you know, you keep it in the family here, that you have people to work. But I know, you know, trying to find guys that can do this kind of stuff is probably not the easiest.
No, it's not. And, like, it's funny that you say that about your past. Because back in the 90s, Precision Mobile Electronics actually, we had a couple guys that were really good with, you know, 12-volt wiring and everything, and they wanted to get into it. So my dad said, yeah, you guys want to, we had a back bay at the shop, and they do the car radio installs. And like you said, that all kind of fell off, so, and we got so busy with general repair that, you know, that kind of took a back seat, and then we kind of reincarnated it, you know, down the road. But yeah, I mean, having, you know, Nick started with us, what was it, last summer?
Yeah, last summer.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked with us last summer, did a couple PD car builds and stuff with us. You know, you can tell that he's interested in it. He's going to school for automotive. And, you know, I remember saying to Derek, I was like, whatever we do, when this kid graduates, we got to get this kid, you know, because out of all the, you know, people that we've hired, even at the mechanic shop, you know, it's very hard to find somebody that actually takes the trade seriously and doesn't just want to come in and, you know, do a job and punch out, doesn't want to, you know, further their learning you know, into it, you know. Whereas I was coming up, it's like I couldn't learn enough about, you know, every aspect of what my job is. But a lot of these guys don't, you know, they fall short on that aspect. They don't follow.
It's a job. It's a job, right? It's a punch the clock. It's nine to five. I get my paycheck.
Right.
And then, you know, when they either don't make it through, they leave for whatever reason, they get fired, and they're like, oh, I don't know what happened. Well, what happened is you didn't really you didn't get into the work. I mean,
exactly.
You know, and it's not easy work. I mean, I will say that I used to crawl under dashboards myself when we first started. If I crawled under a dashboard now, it'd probably take me 3 weeks for my back to recover.
But I got a neck now. See, I used to be the one that have to like squeeze in between the cabin or whatever. Now I got a neck to, you know, climb into the little tiny cabin, and so I don't have to do it anymore.
Yep. Small spaces, right?
But you know, the other part is small.
You have a medium, and we have a large. We're good.
The other thing too is attention to detail, because if you screw something up here, it's they need the stuff to work and to stay safe. And you know, it's one thing if you know you forget to, you know, tighten something on a dashboard of a vehicle, but if it's a police car or fire truck or command vehicle, it's got to work 100% of the time. You know, and if you're lazy and you cut those corners and you know those wires aren't the right way, you know, it's costly.
No, it's mission critical, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you said, it's not like, you know, you're going out for a Sunday drive, your GPS falls off the windshield. You're like, okay, I'll fix it on Monday. You know, that you're taking a car out of service, or could be worse, causing an accident or having another issue where somebody gets hurt. I mean,
airbag doesn't deploy or something crazy like that. I mean,
yeah, and I've seen plenty of these cars like coming out of, you know, stereo shops and stuff like that. And you pull an A-pillar out, and like the GPS wire is like wrapped around the airbag. I'm like, this goes off. This is a bad day for somebody.
That and the wiring.
Yeah.
Like undersized wiring, wrong gauges, direct to the bat. You see all kinds of craziness in this industry.
And that's kind of like when I first started, I saw stuff with different eyes, because I was mainly on the repair side of things at the beginning. I was getting cars that somebody else had already built. They're coming in for a problem. You know, all our whole fleet of cars, all our batteries are dead, you know. Upfitter says that, you know, it can't be rectified. You just got to jump them every shift or whatever, you know. And I'd go through these things, and I would say, okay, well, you know, the way that this is wired, the way that that's wired, you know, and that's how we're not going to do it that way. We're going to figure out a way to make, you know, these cars sustainable to where it's not going to, you know, you constantly have to do it. And we did that to several departments and got them up and running. And they're like, oh, wow, we don't have to live like this anymore. It's like, and I tell them, no matter what, is that if it takes us an extra hour or an extra 2 hours or whatever, at the end of the day, it's got to be done right. If we're going to put our sticker on it or whatever, it's got to be perfect, you know. And that's, you know, and I notice it even when I'm not around, like Derek and Nick, they'll both, you know, okay, we got to, you know, I don't like the way that bolt
sat. I'll spend an extra hour with zip ties just to make it look pretty.
Well, and it's, you know what, that extra hour too, like, you know, and I know you've seen our work down at our shop, like when you got to go back and trace something,
exactly,
and you're like, huh, okay, let me follow this wire, and you know exactly where it goes, and it's the same on every build you do, because we've been in cars, same thing, and let's be honest, the chasing, like when somebody brings somebody else's car and you're like, oh, I have an issue,
follow that,
like,
red wire, which red wire? Well, the third one from the left, that red wire.
As long as it doesn't change colors.
Well, that's the problem. You know, I found that in a Ford once, where the upfitter from Ford, it was one color under the hood, and it was another color in the center console. So it's, you know, those little attention to details and making sure you're...
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten to the point where, you know, all our wires are labeled with the company logo.
Well, we do too.
Same thing, right? And you kind of try and use, you know, oh, the yellow wire is going to be for the speaker, this wire is for this, you know, and so you kind of can trace it and, you know... As you grow, and you know, we went through the growing pains. We had two guys working at the shop, and three, then four. Now we're 14 in the install side, and then on the first inside, there's a total between both locations. There's 53 people right now. So I mean, and this has been exponential since COVID. We really exploded.
Oh yeah.
And so you know, doing it right now. Yeah. Means that as you add employees and you teach them, hey, this wire is this way, you're not there, and some guy that you just hired 2 weeks ago is working in the shop, and the guy pulls in, he's like, oh, it's always the yellow wire, let me start there.
Yeah.
And it makes it easy. I mean, because you go, like you said,
oh, yeah.
or you open up a center console, like, and it looks like, and it just looks like spaghetti just shooting out. Like, you're like, Who wired this?
Why'd you put a charge guard on a charge guard? That doesn't help anything, by the way. Just so you know, when you add additional charge guards to a charge guard, it doesn't solve the problem. Just...
Maybe the first one wasn't working.
Listen, the stuff you see is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's like sometimes I say to Derek all the time, like, it almost took effort, more effort to do it the wrong way than it would have been just to do it the right way to start with. You know, it drives you wild.
Well, and it costs the customer in the end. Because when that vehicle's down, there's a cost to that. And when you have to redo the wiring or you have to diagnose it, it costs money. And we see that where someone's like, oh, we're gonna go with the lower bidder, even though it was, you know, a few hundred dollars less. But what's the cost going to be in the long run when you have vehicles down for weeks at end, or you have products that have failed, or you have to rewire stuff?
Or
there's a cost. There's a metric there.
Yeah, and also distance, right? So they could be in your backyard. The other guy could be an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
Now that little bit of $100, when you got to send two people to drop off a car, maybe two officers, maybe it's a small department. They got to hold somebody in for overtime, or they call in the mechanic, the town mechanic, or whatever, to drop it off. I mean,
there's a cost associated with every one of those decisions that's made.
The problem is that the higher ups, all they look at is the bottom line number. Right. Oh, we're going to save $150 bucks. Yep. Go with them.
Yep.
In the long run, it might cost them $5,000 or $6,000 more.
And that's something in this industry we've got to try to kind of push and try to teach some of these people that maybe are not into the business that we're into, or their administrative aspects in their departments, that there are other metrics other than just the physical dollar, because everything else compounded is worth your time and money.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's the same, it's the same concept that people tell you, oh, we're going to pay for this light because it's more expensive. It's a better light. Is it a better light, or is it just a different brand that's more expensive? And I'm not going to get into which brands or what. But and then, you know, I had a conversation with somebody at the convention recently. You know, we were down in the New Jersey Fireman's Convention, and I'm talking to him, and he goes, well, we go with this brand because they give a 5-year warranty. And I'm like, they're pretty much all giving a 5-year warranty right now, if not more than that. Yeah. So I mean, but you know, people are just stuck on the, oh, this brand is going to give me that warranty because you know. Just say you like it better. You know, it's the one I like better.
It's the same with radios. Any of those things. I like this brand. This is what we've always used. And it's, you know, customers are going to, they're either going to want to use that, or you're going to open their eyes to another product.
I don't care which one you use.
Yeah.
You know, in the end game, I'll get you whatever light you want, you know.
I just want you to be happy with it. That's, you know, at the end of the day.
That it functions and it works, and, you know, the failure rates are low on those.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's been an industry, that's been a kind of an industry-wide issue. Post-COVID, right?
Well, post-COVID, everything.
Post-COVID, you know, you get a batch of lights, and you're like, wow, these don't work the same way as they used to. Something happened.
Yeah.
And then you find out because of the way they're produced, or, you know, where they're produced, because COVID messed things up. You know, you see some issues with stuff, and, you know, we see it on a grand scale usually, because it's usually if we buy a bunch at a time that we need for a project, if there's an issue with one, it's usually all of them.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you guys see the same thing.
Yeah.
Vehicles are fun. I find like spare bolts, like you pull off like the top of the engine cowl, and there's like a spare 10mm bolt. Like, this car's never been apart. Where did this come from?
Or brand new vehicles,
brand new things. You just find like all sorts of random stuff. I'm like, thanks, you know, whoever was working that day. You know, this is an extra bolt for the little thing.
Put it in a little toolbox.
Yeah, you never know when you need it.
When you go, man, I need a 10. Wait, I got one right here.
Yeah.
How about when you go in there and you find a tool?
I did that once. I found
an old brass hammer in a Mercedes once under the hood, sitting right on top of the ABS control module. This is years ago, and it still had the German writing and everything on it. I'm like,
that's awesome.
That's great.
My magnetic flashlight lived for 2 weeks underneath a truck.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
still works and it charges a lot.
Snap on. It held on there.
Yeah, it held on for two weeks underneath the car. We've all done it.
Yeah, we found a couple tools in the trunk of a car once that was not done by us. They brought it in for some work, and you know, you lift the. It was an old Crown Vic, so you had to lift the little thin carpet pad.
Yeah, that they used to covers the tire.
Yeah, and you know, like, a Snap-on socket. Got a whole new socket wrench from Snap-on. Thank you.
$40 a week, and it didn't cost you anything.
Yep. So we found we did find a couple of weapons as well.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Got to call the department. Hey, the guy's got to come back for a minute. He left something in the car.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a car we were stripping out too, so it wasn't like, you know. But you see it all. You know, guys are, you know, they're dropping off. They're trying to get their crap out of the car, and everybody carries more than they do. I mean, go back 20 years, the guy getting the car, he had his little bag with him with his ticket book, his cup of coffee, and that's really probably everything he got in the car with. Now they got you know, they got
whole bag,
shield, helmets. Seat, yeah. You know, they got everything. You know, they got everything. Because God forbid something hops off, they got to be able to respond. And you know, with the schools and everything else that go on, you know, they're always prepared. So it's a whole different amount of stuff they carry. And and of course, after the Crown Vic, everything got smaller, right? And now they start to carry more stuff. And and what do you do?
Yeah, where do you put it?
Well, that's the fire service. It went from, you know, Crown Vics and Explorers, and you can't work out of those anymore as a command vehicle. It's 2,500, 3,500, 250, 350. That's where you have to go now. You can't work out of these because you're expected to carry air packs and ticks, and, you know. And
even a Tahoe's really not cutting it anymore.
Yeah, Suburbans are tight.
Yeah,
Suburbans are tight.
You build a medic car, and the amount of stuff that you put in a medic car, even the Tahoe, you're putting stuff in the back seat. You know?
Well, we've done a lot, and I know you guys probably have where you removed, if not the whole rear seat, the jump seat.
Well, we just did one for Pneumoford Ambulance, and we put a first in cabinet, and that was a full second row seat delete, and there's a ton of space in that now, but you know, you have one passenger. I mean, it's paramedics, so they really have passengers, but you know, but you have to design them that way.
We had an issue here where we were trying to help it was paramedics as well, and they had Suburbans, and they just couldn't carry enough, so we did a seat delete. The problem we have is they ride two paramedics, and sometimes they ride with a trainee, and so we had to leave the little, and that jump seat, when you put a box next to it, you're sitting like this, you know, especially if if you're not real small, you're not going to be comfortable for those shifts driving around on that thing. But you know, it was the only way they could make it work was they had to leave just the jump seat. You know, they couldn't even leave the double wide. It was the jump seat. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, the seat deletes are popular, especially with the paramedics, because they're carrying more and more equipment. So, you know.
And the COVID's not getting smaller.
Yeah, I mean, and they basically have those cars stocked. Like, you know, might as well be an ambulance, less a stretcher. But, I mean, it's an ER. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's an ER is what it is. I mean, they got, you know, I don't know, you know, I know we're in Jersey, you guys are in Connecticut, that everybody's a little different, but they carry probably plenty of medicines on board, right? Yeah. Either they're locked up, climate controlled. Have you guys dealt with all that stuff too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's departments that are doing whole blood. They carry whole blood with them for transfusions.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a whole other ball game with, you know, temperature control.
I mean, and it's constant. Every time we have a meeting with somebody, you know, you have a meeting with that same customer again, you know, maybe 6 months, a year later, and their needs in that period of time from the last vehicle that you built from to the current vehicle that they're speccing. Oh, it'd be nice to have this. Let's add this to this one. And, you know, it's like sometimes you like, how much are you going to carry in these things? I mean, it gets out of control.
They have one bad day.
But they need it. You know, that's...
Yeah, I mean, one bad day, and you never know, right? So even with the fire service, like, we got guys, you know, water rescue. We carry water rescue stuff with us. Our chiefs carry it. We don't do water rescue that much, but we have ponds and lakes in town, so you never – it's kind of like the day you don't have it is the day you're going to need it, right?
Well, you just had that in Connecticut where everyone's like, there was no rain in the forecast, and all of a sudden, town of Oxford gets 15 inches of rain. You know, the flooding was insane.
Yep.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, you know, had no warning of this, and nobody was prepared. Nobody, I mean, you know, we only had 7 inches in our town, but, you know, we're going to, you know, driveways are completely collapsed and people trapped in their houses because they can't gain access. It's
wound up being a fatal weather event.
And
that was the tail end of that storm that came up the coast, and it just hit. I remember hearing about it. It just hit you guys.
And it was within like miles. Like it was like only a few mile wide stretch that got so inundated. But you know, there's still roads closed, but people weren't. You know, you think about it though. It's you buy all that swift water rescue stuff, and it's, you know, it's a 1 in 100 year event, or you know, you never know when you're going to need it. But it's got to go somewhere. You have to put it someplace. Yeah. You can't sit in a closet somewhere.
And you got to have it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, we have it. We have it on our apparatus. We have it, and we have a water rescue dedicated truck, but the chiefs still have at least, you know, a throwback.
That's what we're doing now. Throwback in every truck.
And at least have a vest in, you know, you have to have a, you know, personal flotation device of some sort. So, yeah, I mean, again, like you said, that's why we're going to 2,500s and 3,500s.
Yeah, because you next have to put places.
Next, they'll have a trailer behind them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean.
I don't even want to think about that.
But it's true. Where are you going to go next? Or you're going to go to a 5,500 platform and you'll have chiefs driving these mini rescue trucks around.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're getting to, and you know, I don't know. by me. I'm, you know, been a volunteer fireman for 33 years, and it's really not, we're not seeing an influx of guys coming through the door, breaking down the door, saying, "Hey, I want to volunteer my time." No. So, I mean,
no, the call numbers are going up and up and up.
Well, it's the call numbers, and then for us, I mean, it's the academy. The academy time is insane. It's like, you know, two nights a week plus two weekends a month.
He just finished Firefighter 1. He's going to be doing Firefighter 2, and that was...
How many hours was your Firefighter 1 class?
Don't remember the exact hours. Probably about close to 6 months, five, 6 months.
Okay. Yeah, so this is about the same as here.
Two nights a week and Saturdays. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's what we are. And we're at 7 months. You know, 7 months by the time you know, and they don't do every Saturday. I don't know if you guys did every Saturday, but...
No.
They do about 7 months because we don't do every Saturday, and it's insane. I mean, and guys are like, you know, we have, you know, people show up and they're like, "Hey, I want to join and volunteer my time." And it's like, "Okay, great." And then you tell them that they got to, they're like, "How about I just give you a donation of $100 and, you know, and let somebody else do it." But yeah, then people aren't breaking down the door to join. So now you're doing more with less guys. So you got to outfit your, you know, that's why Chiefs are doing a little bit of everything, right? Because you don't know when that piece of equipment's going to actually be on the road.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, and the training stuff, too, is I've been talking to Nick about that, too. Like, with the OSHA mandates and stuff like that, there's all this new stuff coming from NFPA about all these requirements and stuff. And we recently had OSHA come in, and they're like, "Hey, how do you guys elect your officers? Is it by popular vote? Because you can't do that anymore. You should be doing it by education." So we had to revamp our whole – we were already working on it. But officers have to have additional training. So now you're telling these guys that if you want to be an officer down the road, you've got to take – Fire 1 and Fire 2, and then you got to be an instructor, and then you have to take Fire Officer 1, you have to take Safety Officer, you have to get your Q, you have to take Fire Officer 2 if you want to be a chief, you know? So there's time and money invested there, and, absolutely, you know, retaining those people and providing them the appropriate equipment and stuff so, you know, they can do their jobs easily when you demand so much of them all the time.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, in my fire company, it's the same way. It's popular vote, but we have always had, you know, you have to have Fire 1, Fire 2, Fire 3, Fire Investigator. We never had the Fire Instructor, but I heard that's coming down the road because that's part of the new change.
That's in Connecticut. That's the next step after Firefighter 2, Fire Instructor. Then that opens you up to take Officer and all these other classes. The Instructor is like that the gateway to additional higher education stuff.
Okay,
so we that's how Connecticut puts their in their system.
Yeah, we didn't have to do that in Jersey here, but I saw in the, you know, you guys talk about that new NFPA requirement coming out, and looking at it, that's one of the things for a fire officer is going to be an instructor class. Yeah. So, which, you know, I'm an officer now, but I'm not going back and taking
it. That's just how to teach an adult learner, you know, but you have to, you know, somebody has to go take that class, and, you know, especially at a place where it's heavily volunteer, you know, the classes are being held during the week with paid companies. So, you know, people have to work and they have their families and, you know, all their other obligations. It's hard.
Yeah, they just don't have time.
Yeah,
it's just a lot for a lot of people, they would love to volunteer, but it's just a time thing.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd love to volunteer.
For me, it was, you know, I'm a life member with my fire company in New Fairfield, you know, but it got to the point where, you know, my family was growing, we couldn't, you know, afford to kind of stay in town, so then we moved out of town. And I left town as an assistant chief, you know, but it was one of those things, like, I'm still on the rolls, but it's like, I can't devote the amount of time that, you know, I always held my members to, you know, do. So it's like, rather than, you know, just stick around and show up on the big ones and stuff, it's like, I help, you know, one of the current assistant chiefs out, you know, kind of behind the scenes, if he's got questions about truck committees and stuff like that, you know, keep my finger on the pulse that way. But it's like, you know, until my kids are grown and I can actually go back and devote the time that I used to be able to do to it, it's, you know, I've just kind of taken a back seat to it. And, you know, luckily, you know, they have, within the last couple of years, you guys have been, right, Nick, you guys have had quite a, you know, decent influx of young blood coming through.
Yeah.
And they're taking classes, which when I was a chief officer, that was the hardest thing. I mean, there was a couple years there where you got all these young kids in, but they, you know, were kind of T-shirt members. And it's, you know, and it's the same everywhere.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, they're starting to take the training seriously. You know, and that that was a big thing for me. That kept me up at night. You know, it was like, you know, you got all these guys, but nobody is training for that bad day.
Well, and you're right. You hear it all the time. The T-shirt mm-hmm. members, the guy that wants to, you know, hey, I belong to the fire department. Just come give us $100 and we'll give you two T-shirts. Don't waste everybody's time, right? I mean, it's
our T-shirts are $25 on the website.
Yeah. There you go, a bargain, right? But I mean, it's crazy how it's changed, because I've been doing this. I've been volunteering for 33. I'm in year 34 now. I just started my 34th year. So I mean, it's like, it's day and night. You know, when mm-hmm. I first joined, it was like 75 members. Mm-hmm. You know, you would see about 40 guys on the regular. Now it's like 35 guys, and it's about 7 of us on the regular. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, but like you said, mm-hmm. people's lives, you know, they got kids, they're working two jobs, they're running a business. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and, you know, you got to respect that. And you got to respect the guys that say, hey, listen, I can't dedicate the time, but I'll help out where I can. And mm-hmm. when I can come back, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's not enough.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it never is. I mean, no. You know, so.
I remember the days of, you know, a structure fire tone would go out. You'd pull up to the firehouse. Every piece of apparatus that had wheels on it was out. There was nothing in the firehouse. And you show up now, unfortunately, you know, you got lucky to get 2-3 pieces on the road out of each company. You know, it's.
Yeah, you can come an hour into an incident and get on a piece of equipment because it's still sitting there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
yep. And it's like, and that's like the starkest reality of, you know, where we are today. And it's just, you know, unfortunately, like you're saying, you know, with, you know, between families and having multiple jobs and everything just to keep up with stuff, you know, how much time can you ask these people to devote between all the meetings and, you know, and all the other stuff and the training?
They need to address the training issue. Yeah. Maybe break it down into smaller segments, you know, start with an exterior firefighter, then interior. Like, because that's where you lose. I think that's the biggest turnoff. That's where you lose. Yeah. You lose your biggest amount.
Like this year we were doing an exterior weekend class for a bunch of members who were waiting to take that Fire One class. Because that's, you're right, if they join right after the Fire One class, there's like 8 months before they're doing stuff. So we're like trying to get them involved early on. But hopefully this is just kind of like that ebb and flow thing where we're at in the industry. It's, you know, in the fire service or even in the automotive industry where, you know, you're trying mm-hmm. to find, you know, like we talked before, solid employees and people that are really into it. Maybe we're just kind of in this weird, you know, post-COVID phase where, you know, people aren't into it. Maybe this next group of people that are going to be coming out of school in the next few years are going to be really kind of into this stuff, you know, or we, you know, get these people from the fire or EMS or police services that are interested in this to come to the industry.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping, you got, you know, big voices out there like Mike Rowe and, you know, everybody that's pushing, you know, this, you know, work with your hands and,
the trades are getting back into the trades.
Yeah.
So,
and if you work the trades right, I mean, you can have a hell of a life. You know,
and a lot less debt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah, I mean, it is a balance, and you know, it's great, you know, that we have doctors and lawyers and you know, and mathematicians and all that stuff, but we also need plumbers, electricians, mm-hmm. you know, people that, you know, skilled labor that can build houses and you know, all that. It's funny because when we go out and put out an application, like especially for the first inside, mm-hmm. it's like, well, you have to be kind of basic with woodworking, and people mm-hmm. are like, woodworking, like, mm-hmm. what do you do? Some people think that our cabinets aren't even, they think they're made out of metal. Mm-hmm. So when you tell them they're made out of wood, it's kind of like,
I've gotten that a couple of times.
They have no idea. They thought they were metal.
Yeah.
But you know, they're wood with a, it's in essence a bed liner. It's not as rough, but it's in essence a bed liner on it. So, I mean, you know, we're happy with the product we put out. You know, I hope, you know, as dealers and partners with you guys, you know, we hope that, you know, you guys are happy with it. I mean, as far as, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about how it works when you guys reach out to us and stuff like that. We can go
there. So, I mean, usually the customer comes in, and a lot of the time they have a rough idea of what they're, you know, looking for. And we try to educate them as best we can because, you know, they're just like with the lighting brands, you know, everybody comes through and they got these, you know, I want, you know, this brand, that brand. Well, why do you want that? Oh, well, that's because what we've always had. oh, come over here, look at this other car that we're building, you know, check out the, oh man, that's a nice console, look, shake it, oh wow, it doesn't rattle, it doesn't it doesn't catch crumb, it doesn't have all these nooks and crannies in
when
it.
When it's 0 degrees out, it's not ice cold.
It's not a brick of ice yeah. in between the seats.
It doesn't have the crumb catchers, right? Yeah. That drives me nuts.
It doesn't rust.
It's the same color all the way through, you know, it's easy to bolt accessories to, it's all these things, and they're like, wow, that's a really great solution, you know, can you probably, said, and the best part is, you know, pricing on it is basically on par with what you're used to, and it's fully custom. You want a speaker cutout in the side, we put a speaker cutout. You want your display for your Kuzmol or your Xantrex or whatever on the side, you got a cutout. You want armrests, you want a raised top, like, you have all these options available to you, which, you know, all the other things, I always call it, it's like an erector set. You're bolting all these other, you know, things onto it to, you know, rather than it being one, you know,
streamline integrated.
Exactly. One thing, you know, from the beginning. And so usually that sells itself. And then the, you know, as far as, you know, cabinetry, trying to figure out, okay, well, what do you got to carry this week? and then, you know, we sit down, and usually the way it works is I try to be heavily involved as far as kind of be a mediary between the customer and, say, Marianne. Just because it, unless it's a super convoluted thing that the customer's trying to achieve, then I try to hook them up direct. But I feel like the amount of back and forth, you know, I try to cut down that. And I know you guys are busy, so we try to, you know.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, we try to make it as easy as possible because I know what it's like. And, you know, I have the customer in front of me. I have their gear in front of me. And we try to get a plan together, kind of somewhat worked out. And then we send it over. And then, you know, between Ryan and Marianne, we'll see if it's possible to fit within the confines.
Yeah. I literally told Marianne, these are the dimensions of all the stuff we have. Just figure it out. She sent something back. So,
yeah.
Shout out to Marianne for being a trooper.
She's awesome to work with. You know, Ryan's all right. But
nah. Ryan will drive you nuts.
Yes. No, Ryan's awesome.
But when you want that customization, you want that, you know, there's some unique feature. Or, you know, we noticed with one set of armrests, the armrest was just a hair low. Well, the next set we just got, you know. You guys are like, yeah, actually, we kind of noticed that this was a little too. We raised it, and you know, it makes a huge difference. Being able to talk to somebody and say, "Hey, listen, this is a great product. This is a thing we noticed." Because if you don't get feedback from the customers, how are you gonna, you know, improve the product or you know, make a product better?
And for us, a lot of times, based on the feedback from you guys that you get from the customers, we're making changes on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas a manufacturer, they got to shut down. They have to retool. Oh, yeah. They have to re-engineer.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're making. I mean, listen, you know, Matt and Samantha, they're in the back side of it. They're doing all the programming, all that stuff. They're the ones that have to deal with it.
Right.
So it gets dealt with, but it's a little different than a company who's basically making the same widget every time, and now they have to stop, shut down, retool, or, you know what, thanks for that helpful information. We'll get around to it.
Right.
And it's 2 years before they make the change, if they even do make the change. Whereas, you know, we're dealing with people. We're in the industry, right? So, you know, being volunteers, you know, I'm retired from my law enforcement job. I know what it's like to sit in a car. I know what it's like to have a console. It's just not, the armrest just isn't right.
It doesn't feel right.
It's uncomfortable, right? And you know, that's, a lot of times that's your office, your home for.
And you shouldn't have to worry about what's there. You should be able to just reach down, or whatever system you have installed in your vehicle, it should be doing it for you. The automation should be doing all the stuff. You have so much other stuff to worry about when you're in law enforcement or fire. You're driving to the call. You're listening to what's going on. You got your CAD beeping. You know, everything in the middle should be, you know, just put your hand over. It should be right there. It should work every time. It should be comfortable, and you shouldn't have to think about it.
Exactly. And it comes down to the same thing when we set up the vehicles, right? So we've been in vehicles, and we're like, you got this from the same place? They're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, why is the siren controls here on three of them, and then on four and five, they moved it down here? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know, because probably a different guy installed it. Well, that's great, except for the guy who's been driving that car for 8 years knows it's up here.
Right.
Now he gets in another car because that car's out of service for the day, and he's reaching up. And
now he looks down.
He's got to look down because you know, you go by muscle memory, right? That's what they say, especially high stress. Yeah. And it's not there. Now you're like, oh, hang on. Wait. And then you take your eyes off the road for a second. God knows what happens. So, you know, I know, you know, you hear all these horror stories about the way people install stuff. So, I mean, I'm glad you guys are happy with our product. I mean, we try and really, again, I know, you know, some people don't like to bother Mary Ann. And some places they're like busy. Like, hey, Mary Ann, we're going to pass the customer off to you. Just let us know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it works either way, and we're happy to do it either way. You know, it just depends on the level that you guys want to be involved with the customer. Sometimes, like you said, it's easier because you know the customer, you've been dealing with them for a while. Yeah. You know what, how much junk,
exactly, yeah,
equipment,
right?
You know, and then you're always talking to them. It's like, do you really need all this in there? And it's always, oh yeah, and then I also need to get this, and this in there on top of it.
I mean, and I've had it before. You know, a lot of the times the customers, you know. Oh, yeah, it's got a ARE cap, and they give the wrong model number, and then you get it, and the slide-out isn't notched right for the box because the thing that they gave was the wrong.
The model number of the cap was
so incorrect. So, like, that's why it's, like, like to make sure everything's lined up. That way nobody has any grief along the way, and it's, you know, it works out, you know, really good that way. You know, and it's also good to, like, I consider our shop, you know, more of a, we do highly custom. We don't try to do cookie cutter, you know, cars. You know, some guys say, oh, well, you can't make money doing it that way. But that's why a majority of our customers come to us, is because they want something a little bit different. They want it set up their way, or they've been somewhere else where they were told it couldn't be done. You know, and we take the time to make it happen the way that they want it. I mean, it's their car. It's their vehicle that they're building. It's their budget, you know, whatever they want to do with it. And
they got to live in it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And live with it.
Exactly. And be happy with it. I can't tell you how many times, you know, we get cars in from other shops that we have to rework. And, you know, you ask yourself, okay, well, why is it here? You know, why didn't it go back to where, you know, whoever did it? And they just, oh, you know, we can't change it. That's the way we do it every time. And that's just the way it is. And it's like, okay, well, I'll spend 3 hours of our time and make it the way you want it, you know. You're the customer.
Yeah, because they went back to that guy twice, and the guy said, no, I can only do it this way because it doesn't work that way.
Right.
So they go for another opinion, right? It's like going to a doctor for a second opinion. Right. They're like, well, why not? You could easily do it. Yeah. And that's when you get a customer for life, right? Because now all of a sudden they're like, we're not going back.
Yeah.
And like we said before, I know they got to fight with, you know, their powers to be and say, hey, listen, I don't care if it's $100 more. This is the way we like it set up.
Right.
We're getting it our way, not, you know.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
And it's awesome on the flip side of that, having, you know, I can call up Ryan or I can call up Mary Ann and say, hey, this is the project we're working on. This is what they're looking for. You know, can we make it happen? And usually, you know, and we've done enough cabinets with you guys. Like, they like a hodgepodge of that design and this one from this. And Ryan literally put them on the screen.
Starts melting them together.
Yeah. And it's like within 20 minutes, you know, he had a solution for the guy.
You've seen what it looks like. It looks like air traffic control with all the screens he's got.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Oh, well, you will.
Yeah.
It does look like an air traffic controller station.
Yeah, he's got screens all over the place.
He's got a screen up here, a screen here, a screen here. There's screens everywhere.
I mean, it's having somebody that you can say, you know, even on a pre-build meeting, before you're even talking numbers or whatever, customer thinks, you know, hey, do you think this is possible that we can do it? I know that you guys are capable of getting it done for us, you know, and there hasn't been
as long as it fits.
Yeah, I mean that's a big thing, you know, and you know, but being able to have that relationship that I can say, you know, without fail, as long as it's, you know, within the confines of the car, you know, we can make it happen, you know, and that's a huge resource to have in our pocket, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Ryan's a good resource for the 12-volt stuff, too, because sometimes we've dealt with some really quirky stuff. We've done some really weird builds, and I know you guys are starting to really expand out on those, too, a little bit, where you're getting these, you know, more intense builds, especially not so much police, but fire command, and they're putting drones in now, drone cabinets.
Multi-purpose vehicles.
Yep.
And, we're building we got a Chevy 6500 that we're building. It's a swap loader, hook-and-go truck that's got a brush fire skid. It's, you know, they're eventually going to get like a mass casualty box for it.
Yeah.
It's multi-purpose. They're trying to,
they can do water rescue. They can set up different skids and just put them on. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it takes some ingenuity when you're trying to figure out how to get the lights to flash on the skid and stuff. And
when you're trying to get stuff, you know,
it's got to be quick, right?
Right.
Yeah. they want the system to work off the truck, on the truck, you know. So, you know, with sound off signal, we were able to use their three wire stuff and, you know, basically have two separate systems, but you plug one plug in, the whole thing's back together in sync. Everything
works
flashes,
no matter what. Yep.
And it's, you know, it's pretty cool. They can leave the brush fire skid in the cul-de-sac
with the slice fire.
All the lights on it, the scene lighting and everything works on it, and they can drive away with the truck and go get something else, you know.
Yeah, you got to go pick up something else.
Go pick up hose or whatever. They throw a flatbed on it. And,
or like you said, mass casualty, because now they got to evacuate people. Yeah. Whatever they need, they can go back and get it.
And, you know, this is for a volunteer department that has, you know, what, they're 75% career, basically, 25%.
I'd say like 80%.
Yeah.
Fire.
So, you know, they're trying to keep themselves alive and, you know, relevant and being able to be useful in their city, and, you know, they're finding innovative ways to do it, which is, you know, it's commendable that they're, you know, want to stay viable.
Yeah, it's not easy, right? No. It's not cheap either.
No.
It's, you know, it's because, like you said, it's one thing to just have skids and you plop them off, and, you know, like, you know, you see the guys that have with the work trucks, that's easy because, you know, you don't have all the lights, you don't have to keep them lit when they're they're parked or dropped, you know. Right. So it's definitely a challenge. I mean.
And we welcome that because it gets, you know, that's the best part of this job, I think, is, you know, being every day, you know, being able to, okay, let's push our skill set a little further today. And, you know, whether it's playing on the CNC machine or, you know, welding or whatever, you know, it's just keeps it new.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, that's the downside, in my opinion, you know, on the flip side of, you know, my life, the automotive business is a lot of the same. That's why I really got interested in this side, is every day is really different.
It's a little different every day. You can do something different, yeah. You don't get bored. You don't get as bored easily, right?
Yeah.
You're always being challenged with something, so.
He's much happier when he's over at our shop, so. yeah, and, like, talk about, like, you know, like, you know, Ryan's really good about helping out with 12-volt. Something that we've seen through the industry, and we were talking to Ryan about it too, is the phone-a-friend option. And upfitters kind of working in conjunction with each other. You know, I have, when I have a troubleshooting thing, I can shoot, you know, troubleshoot the national sales manager or training manager for Sound Off. I can shoot him a message, or I can shoot one of the, you know, reps from Team One a message, or I have a couple guys that, you know, do it on their spare side when I have, like, a, you know, question.
Yep.
Some of these shops are just, they don't want to help you out or, you know, give you any advice, and they're all about it in for themselves. And it's just nice being able to, like, pick up the phone and be like, hey, listen, this is the issue I'm having. Have you had this issue before? And they're able to, like, you know, walk you through something maybe you're not familiar with.
Did you try this or look at this could be your issue? Yeah, I remember when we first came into the industry years ago, it was, you know, there was nobody to call.
Yeah.
You couldn't call anybody because nobody would help you out. And, you know, now they have the 12-volt Facebook groups and stuff like that where, Ryan's involved with some of that stuff.
Yeah, and that's where we've built a lot of friendships through and you know, have people that are into it like us. You know,
but on the flip side of that, though, like, you know, commend Ryan too, is, you know, there's a lot of guys that are out there in these groups that you pose a question and they come back, oh, what are you, an idiot, you don't know what you're doing, blah blah blah. You know, instead of really trying to, you know, in a lot of those groups I keep my, you know, mouth quiet. I'll mess with somebody off to the side or whatever, but, you know, somebody's asking for something because they genuinely don't know. And, you know, a lot of guys in the industry just want to beat them down over that. And say, oh, what are you doing working on people? Listen, the only way that they're going to learn and get better is if somebody's there to teach them. And maybe they don't have that person there to teach them, you know?
Well, and like we said before, the industry's smaller now, right? Because we don't have that 12-volt experience coming in from the car alarms and the remote starters and stuff like that. So they really have to learn on the job or know somebody, you know? And that's the biggest thing. I mean, I know Ryan, you know, I was in the office one day, and Ryan and I used to have the shared office, you know, and I was sitting across from him, and his phone rang, and he's talking to this guy, and I'm like, he was walking this guy through everything, and it was like 20 minutes, and he gets off the phone, and I go, what customer was that? He goes, oh, it was one of the guys from one of those Facebook groups. He had a real question about something, and I go, oh, where's he at? He goes, oh, he's in Idaho, and I'm like, so he actually called, and Ryan took the 20 minutes out of his day to, like, walk this guy through, and it was a programming issue of some sort that the guy was having, and he's like, you know, he walked him through it, and you know, 10 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
No.
You know, and that's the difference in the industry nowadays. Right. I think it's, you know, some of it's changed, and, you know, it, hopefully it's all for the better, but,
you know. No, I think it's for those mom-and-pop shops, you know, the you know, smaller, more dedicated groups are into, you know, there's so much work to go around. So helping somebody else out, you know, only makes you look better in everybody's eyes. It's, and you know, the one little interaction could lead you thousands and thousands of dollars of work because, hey, these guys took their time out of their day to troubleshoot this problem or take a look at it and, you know, didn't charge me for it.
Yeah, and
being kind doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, and they might have a project that all of a sudden, hey, they call up, hey, listen, I got this project. It's going to cost us about $150,000. You know, can we send you some work?
Yeah.
Because you helped us out with something. Oh, yeah. You know, all of a sudden you're like, hey, listen, I'm picking up work that I really didn't even go out and solicit. But,
right.
And like you said, there is a ton of work to go around. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've noticed, and I don't know the whole spectrum of it everywhere, but I know in Jersey we're seeing some of the big players have kind of disappeared after COVID, and right. Things have happened where, you know, disgruntled employees and everything else, people leaving, right. That they pretty much, their operations are shut down. So right. Now we're getting the overflow of work. Right. Is that, are you guys seeing that up by you? Or
we went from, very quickly, went from like 4 to 6 week like lead time on stuff to now we're 20 plus weeks out for, you know, full builds.
Okay, good. I don't feel so bad because that's about where we are.
No, and it exploded. Like it happened overnight and, you know, it's getting to the point where it's like, okay, well, just have to be upfront with them. Like, listen, if you want to get it in on the schedule, you know, that's what it's going to be. But we've had, you know, and then you're playing the game of, okay, you got a vehicle on order. Not sure, you know, is it going to be here in 6 weeks or 6 months? You know, we just had a vehicle dropped on us, you know, end of August that I wasn't expecting to, you know, land in our shop till November. So it's like, you know, but it is what it is. Or you just take it and
they show up with the car and they're like, hey, we need this done now.
But yeah, can you give me all this stuff tomorrow? Yeah.
I need cabinetry and I need all this. And you're like, and caps and all that. It's like, you know.
Everything's 10-12 weeks and that's normal. Just trying to get everything lined up. It's
10-12 weeks is about the standard now in anything with the industry. And, you know, I always tell people, they're like, they call me up and they're like, hey, I need you to do me a favor. I'm trying to get this cabinet and I need it right away for a build. I'm like, when did you know you were getting this car? Because I know you had to order lights. I know they had to order the car at some point.
Yeah.
You know, unless it was something that, you know, somebody fell through on a deal on a car and they were able to walk into
the
deal.
Or when they're sitting at the shop down the street and, you know, I was like, hey, can I have those trucks? And came and pick them up. Now I'm waiting on cabinets. But it worked out to my advantage. I don't have to wait for a car. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's, you know, and again, you wouldn't have got that in the industry years ago if you needed a vehicle around.
I literally posted a note on one of the Tahoe forums. Like, anybody on the East Coast have any red Tahoes? And literally, bloop, Ryan. He's like, hey. You know, and that was it. It was the easiest car shopping, you know, experience ever, you know. But, you know, the other thing, too, is you know, he helped me out there. And once again, you know, the product speaks for itself, but we keep pushing people there because, you know, I use the product on a daily basis in my command vehicle. You know, it gets beat up. It gets left out in the rain. It hasn't failed. It works well. You know, I can say, hey, listen, I use this product every day. You guys should really be looking at it.
And we were telling you last time, you know, we were down picking up cabinets over at the other shop that, you know, basically the first in solution is our basic default. You know, we go there first unless the customer's absolutely adamant that they want something else.
You'll get that. But we do appreciate that you guys push our product.
I mean,
you haven't told us no yet.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
we've asked for stuff and I haven't gotten a no yet. So.
And the fit and finish on everything is always perfect. Bolts right in the car. I mean, some other manufacturers too, that's the other thing, that, you know, the time that is involved to assemble some of these consoles versus I can take yours. I don't even have to unbox it. I take it out of the bed of my truck, slide it right in the car, 4 bolts or 4 nuts, and it's installed in the vehicle, I just mount the accessories into the faceplate. I mean, you're off to the races. You're right then and there. You saved at least an hour, you know, between making sure everything's lined up and everything's actually, you know, bolted together true and, you know. so that the faceplate's all fit on nice.
Or when there's extra parts, then you're like, why do I have extra parts?
those were given to you so you have them for the next build.
Yeah apparently.
So that's what you do. Extra parts.
Yeah, just
free money.
Yeah, that's it.
But yeah, the faceplates used to drive us nuts way back when too. Before we started building our own stuff, it was always like.
And then you get one crooked, and then they're all crooked, and at the very end, the last one doesn't fit. You're like,
you gotta go back and start all over again. Yeah, it's always a challenge, right? Yeah. So I love when they come in after they've been, especially police ones, and you look down and you're like, you could probably eat 3 days worth of food in all those little crumb patches.
What happened to this thing?
Yeah.
Who hurt you?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Question for you is what got you guys into that side of the market?
So I think I went into it a little bit in one of the podcasts, but I was, Ryan's like, we got to get a CNC machine. We got to get a CNC machine. So we had the 1075 side going, and he's like, we're going to get a CNC machine because we were cutting our own cabinets, My dad had a woodworking shop in our basement. He was big into the wood. So we're hand cutting them and we're spending an extra 5 or 6 hours on every build because none of us could cut straight. it was always a little, everything was always a little bit off. And you start putting them together, they're squeaky. Mm. Like, oh, this isn't what we want. So Ryan's like, oh, we can do it with a CNC. Mm. So Ryan gets this, we get a CNC. He starts learning how to program it. He starts playing around with it. So we start making cabinets for us. So one day I'm at work. I think I'm driving home and my phone rings. It's Ryan. I go, what's up? He goes, first in, and I go, first out. Okay. He's like, no, that's what we're going to do. And I'm like, and it was him and Matt, and they were pitching it. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, Ryan's whole thing was, hey, listen, we're making it for ourselves. We know the product works. We know it's a good product. We have a CNC machine sitting here that we're using a couple hours a week. Mm-hmm. Now we have two CNC machines that run about 12 to 13 hours a day nonstop. Mm. It's insane. But yeah, that's how we got started. Mm. And we started making for ourselves, and then we realized we liked the product. People that we were selling the product to liked the product. Mm. And then as you know, Ryan started the social media craze, and then our marketing team, once we brought in a marketing team, they took over, and it's just, social media is huge. Oh,
that's huge. That's like, huge for us. I mean,
the way I became a customer was, back in late 2016, I think. I posted up. I was looking for deals on, trying to get the best pricing on consoles and cabinetry, and trying to figure out who to network through to, because if you're a small shop, you gotta go through a master distributor and all this. Well, everybody's tacking
their percentage on, right?
Or it was, people that were direct competition, and they were siphoning off my leads, and so
we went through the same growing pains as you did.
I'm trying to, I was trying to get outside of, my area, and then, Ryan messaged me. It was like, hey, have you heard about our first in stuff? I said, no. It said send me some samples or whatever. So he said. And the first thing that we did was a 2017 F250, and he did a slide out command cabinet of it, and it actually wound up being in your catalog. It was the red,
yep,
red F250 with a cabinet out the back, and it was the Wood Series console, the original, the first generation,
the OG,
and that truck still to this day looks perfect. Still frontline chief's response vehicle. I mean, looks as fresh as the day it got built. Like, it's
that's
just
great.
And it's, can't ask for anything better. And it was like the cooler. We're sitting in a meeting, and how cool would it be if the, the truck's big, they call it Big Red. And he goes, how cool would it be if the cabinet was red? And I was like, well, he sent me the color samples. They offer red.
It was blue. A blue that looked purple.
Yeah.
Right? It was black, gray and tan, and red.
Yeah. And then
we used to have the chips that were like that big.
Yeah. I still have them at the shop. And he goes, I was like, they want to do a red cabinet. And Marianne was like floored. She's like, you got to do it. So...
cost us extra money to do that. We had to switch over.
Let me tell you though, but
clean all the paint guns out and all that stuff. But
it sold a lot of cabinets. So let me tell you, it sold a lot of cabinets.
So the the thing that made me like, all right, like I'm a customer for life with these guys was, you know, we were scheduled to come down and pick it up. And, you know, I was telling Ryan, hey, you know, we're going to be leaving in a little bit. And he goes, they're respraying it. They don't like the way that the red turned out. They're going to spray it again. The fact that they said, no, we're not happy with it. We're going to take it all, blow it all apart and respray it to make sure it was perfect. I was like, all right.
Yeah, I remember that conversation. Ryan's like, we got to respray it. I'm like, just respray it. It's, you know, you can't let it go out looking.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, the black was very easy for us because we got used to working with it. But other colors do make it, are a little more challenging.
Yeah, how many times do you have to spray it red until it's red, not pink, or, you know, right color red?
Yeah,
or,
that's the thing. You know. It's like, you know, some parts of it came out the color that I was looking, and then there were some spots that were, like, splotching. He's like, no, can't do it. So yeah. I was like, all right.
Black cabinets are the way to go anyways.
These guys are legit, and, you know, that's that. Because that's how I do business. If they treat me like I'd treat one of my customers, you know, that's it.
Yeah, and that you came in, you were in early. Yeah. I mean, that was near the beginning. You know, we weren't around that long at that point. Mm-hmm. We were still getting our feet a little wet in the industry. But, you know, just, you know, I enjoy when people have, you know, hearing the stories because, you know, it's like, did we do the right thing? You know, you always wonder, you know, is it going to be the right thing? Are we doing the right thing or are we not? And it's always a challenge. You know, you're always like, you know, with every business, right? And then it's like, well, do I want to take a chance on these guys? Like, are they going to be around forever? Right. Like, you know, when you come to us, you're like, do I take a chance on these guys? You know, you know, what happens if the cabinet's crap?
Right.
You know, it's a leap of faith, right?
Exactly.
You got to take that leap of faith.
Yeah, especially when you guys, you know, weren't doing it that long. So it's like, okay, they don't have cabinets that have been out 5 years. That I can go take a look at and see how they're holding up.
No, but at that time, there was only so many people that were doing cabinets anyways. Yeah. Nothing or custom to that, that extent.
Yeah, nothing.
You were still getting the carpeting. I mean, Connecticut, they were, up until a couple of years ago, they were still using the carpeting. And I'm like,
let's not get on the carpeting subject.
Yeah. I said to somebody, I go.
It happens when it rains in Connecticut, right? Those things get all moldy.
Well, I said, what happens if the guy from EMS is wearing a rubber glove and he walks up with blood on his hand, he puts it here, he goes, oh, we just spray it down with bleach. I go, you know, you got to rip that thing out and start all over again. It's carpet. It's going to soak in there.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst thing. Oh. And then
hose a cabinet off now.
Yeah. You know? You can wash it out, spray it with a bleach solution, wipe it down,
and
you're good to go.
Nothing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was our goal. Was like, hey, listen, how do we make this, you know, I always call it firefighter proof, you know, because if they can make it happen, they will. That's why we use the slides that we use on all our drawers because, you know, people are like, well, you don't need that kind of weight on a drawer. I go, except for at 2 o'clock in the morning when there's three guys like this leaning on a cabinet and one guy puts both hands on there and now you watch the cabinet, you know, the drawer just fall out of the cabinet and it's happened.
Or when you got to get one of the back bolts and Derek has to take a ride in on the drawer.
We
did that on New Milford's, but they had the aluminum drawers. But it's like, hey, man, these things are rated for, you know, 600 pounds.
And, you know, people are like, oh, 600 pounds. You're never going to have 600 pounds in it. No, you're not. But four guys leaning on it and the weight of everything in there, it doesn't take much extra, especially if you have a 250-pound slide out.
Yeah.
That's why we go to 600. We firefighter proof it.
Yeah.
You know, we want, again, mission critical, right?
Right.
God forbid you can't pull that thing out and it fails when you got to get to that AED or you got to get that air pack.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, it's tough. So, right, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
How to make sure you're still in the conversation here. You got quiet for a while.
What's your take as, you know, new to the field? Really, you know, greenhorn.
It's interesting. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that you don't really see. And the social media aspect is just really what kicks it off and gets your name out there.
Oh, you have no idea because we were, like, one of the first ones that were heavily crazy into the social media. Mm-hmm. Ryan's like, social media, social media, social media. And I'm like, you know, because I'm, you know, we're definitely in a different age group. So, you know, I'm a little older than Ryan and Ryan's a little older than you are, so you know it is different. So,
I
start a YouTube channel like 10 seconds ago. I'm like, no, that's Ryan's domain. I'm not doing the YouTube. I'll stick with the TikTok and the Instagram and the Facebook. I'll do that. Ryan can keep YouTube. It's fine.
I mean, it's just crazy to think about, like, you know, what's happened in 2 years, you know, now with two more employees on this side of the business. And then to, you know, October, we're doing our first trade show at Foxwoods. It's like, okay, how did we get here? You know, in such a short span of time, and it's just exponentially just getting more and more. And it's, you know, we're just holding on for the ride and just still keeping to our basics of just do it right. And, you know, don't lose sight of that and don't get to a point of where it's like, all right, we got to crank them out the door. It's like, you know.
Well, we're in that position, but we still don't crank them out the door. It's got to be they're going out.
Yeah,
correct. Yeah. So
right, which no matter what. Yeah, I mean that's my non-negotiable is that's what it's got to be. It's got to be right when it leaves.
Well, you know, again, you're one of the few that you know have the same like. There's other companies that are like, just get that thing out the door so we can get paid.
Right.
And then what happens to it? 2 years later or 8 months later, it's in your shop when somebody's looking at it going, what happened? And then and then it's gone, right? It's gone from them, and it's now your business. Right.
Well, that's the conversation we had. It says quantity versus quality. The quality is the more important aspect.
Yeah, and it's balanced.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd rather the product go out there the right way and not have to, because once again, if it comes back to us, we have to fix it. Or, you know, like we see these other big places, and they're like, hey, can you fix this? This isn't right. You know, now it's costing the customer more money.
Yep.
That or you're eating the labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we're fixing something that you should have done the right way, you know, first time.
That's the biggest part of the whole thing is just, you know, how would I want it if I was the customer? And, you know, that's how my dad survived 41 years in the automotive business. And, you know, if there's anything I learned from him, that's how to do business that way. And that's...
Take care of customers, right? And they'll come back. Yeah, I mean, you know, I always say to people, they're like, oh, I'll see you next week. I'm like, I hope not.
Yeah.
Unless you're bringing something new back. Yeah, right. Like, we don't want to see you next week.
If you're
going
to bring breakfast and coffee, like, absolutely come back next week.
We don't want to see you
in the next car. Yeah,
yeah, we don't want to see you with issues. And, you know,
you know,
a lot of times it's, you know, now the biggest issue that people come back with is like, oh, you know, I was looking at the lights and I was hoping to change this pattern to that pattern.
That's kind of a constant thing. I always tell people, I'm like, use it for a couple weeks. Like, use
it. You'll figure it out.
And then tell me, like, hey, listen, I really don't use this function, even though I thought it was really cool one time, but I really need this function. And you come back, I'll fix your programming for you.
Yeah, especially when you get into, you know, the blueprints. I mean, you could do anything and everything you can think of with them. It's like, you know, we program them a base way, you know, based on our, you know, initial layout and the customer's initial needs. And then, you know, live with it for a week or two. And you want something tweaked, you know. And, you know,
and then once you do that, you build their file, right?
Right.
So now you know every car you're going to do for them is going to look exactly the same.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Connecticut, you know, it's a big state with one company. And, you know, we program both systems so they are mirrors of each other. So you can't tell if one's a Wayland car or one's a Soundoff car. You know, their patterns are similar and they function exactly the same. But it's not, you know, power wire and a ground wire anymore and a sync wire. It's, you know, there's days where I could spend an entire day just programming and QCing, you know, the phasing on a vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or making sure that, you know, every setting is working correctly. That's a huge part of what we do.
Because now everybody's using running lights, so they're running with lights on. They're running with
opening the door, closing the door, and
putting it in drive, putting it in park, siren cutoffs, right? All that stuff is now.
Got to make sure all your overrides and everything are functioning the way that they should, and that you don't have a inadvertent thing turn on when something else happens. Trying to run through all those, you know, before the car leaves, so the customer's like, hey, so I was at the gas pump, and I opened my door, and these lights turned on, and it's making the, you know, don't want that. Because then they're thinking the system's freaking out. Meanwhile, it's like, oh, I just see if I have to move this one thing from here to here in the program, and everything's all fixed.
I don't know. I like it that it's 2024, and I still watch live PD, and then there's police cars that go into park, and the siren doesn't shut off. It drives me nuts.
So
it's the simplest thing
to
do.
That was the hardest thing for us when I worked was – you bail out a car, and you're chasing somebody, and all you hear is the siren. Because back then, it was as basic as you get. I mean, you wanted to change a color pattern, all you had to do was get a 12-volt and keep flicking through and change the pattern of the lights.
Yeah.
And then you would hope that they would all sync together at some point because there was no real syncing them. It was just a pattern change wire, and that was really it. I mean, you didn't have many choices. I mean, that was I started a while ago, and I retired almost over 5.5 years ago, so... you know, and a lot has changed in the industry, you know, computer controlled, and you know, I'm sure, you know, self-driving cars you'll be dealing with or something crazy like that, you know, automated, some kind of automated car.
Self-driving fire truck, that's the day the fire service dies.
Yeah.
No matter how bad of a day you have, if you get behind the wheel of a fire truck, it's always a better day. That's why I've never seen anybody frowning driving a fire truck. So.
That's why every kid always wants to be a firefighter, right? Not a police officer, a firefighter. Because it's all fun, right?
Yeah.
But so what else you got? Anything else? Nick, anything else for us?
Nothing I have.
Oh. Very quiet today. The young guy, he'll get there. He'll get there.
I just hope, you know, I hope this, you know, these companies keep working with each other and, you know, try to build this business up to where it should be. Because I think there's been some lackluster companies out there that have been, you know, putting out subpar products, and departments kind of just go, well, this is what we know. Yep. We've been using them. Well, you're not happy with them. You know, there's other companies out there that are putting out a stellar product. You know, take a look and you know, just take a look. You don't have to necessarily go with them or go with that, and, you know, that builder or whatever. But
open your eyes to
there's stuff out there that, you know.
Yeah, the industry's changing.
You can.
And hopefully it just keeps changing for the better. Like you said.
Yeah. And, you know, it's safety and quality and, you know, but you want to make sure the products are right. And it's, you know, nothing drives me nuts more than seeing, you know, a car on the side of the road. And I'm like, what's going on there? It's doing like six different things at once. And I'm like, the taxpayers are paying for that stuff. It's, you know, when your tax dollars are going into that, you're like, you want it right.
Yeah. And the, you know, the sync patterns and all that stuff, it's all on a safety aspect, right? Because now we're trying to sync so that we don't have, you know, a gazillion lights. Yeah, I mean, lights are so bright.
They want a gazillion lights, and they all want them to flash. But now it's we want them to slow down, and we want to kind of, you know.
Well, you were blinding people on the side of the road.
Calm that scene and, you know, make sure everything's, you know.
Telling them the other morning, I was on the way in very super early. They were doing paving in my hometown, and I get down to the end of the street there where it meets, you know, Route 7. It's four lanes, you know. They had this cone pattern set up, and there was a police car in front of me. Lights are, you know, going ape shit, and it's like
you can't even see where you're supposed to go, right?
What do you want me to do?
I literally stopped in the middle of the road and sat there until I saw this little baton stick out from in front of the car, and then he directed me around because it was such chaos that, you know, it's like, well, I can't even see where the workers are. I see the steamrollers, but I don't know where the guys on the ground are. And it's like, you know, if that car just had a park kill programmed into a park pattern, you know, I'd be able to see everything. I couldn't even see his traffic pattern that he had set. He had a million cones out.
Crazy.
Couldn't tell you what they wanted me to do, you know. But that's like case in point. And I think I still have it on my dash cam. But it's like, that's like prime example of, you know, what we're trying to accomplish with, you know, moving the industry forward with this type of stuff. You know?
And that's even on the bigger scale of stuff, too. Like, we purchased a new E1 fire truck. It's got a system in it. I got a PL Custom Ambulance. It's got a system in it. So it syncs with all the rest of our existing stuff. And it took a little convincing to get some of them to, you know, well, this is the way we do it. Well, this is what I want. And you guys should also be striving to do this as, you know, larger companies. And now all the companies are having this issue. People are like, we want to see a blueprint system, or we want to see a core system in our fire apparatus. Trying to get these big companies on board with it too, because this is where the whole thing is. You see every day trucks are getting hit on the highways, and, you know, people aren't paying attention to you. And
we just had one down here in Bergen County.
We had a few in Connecticut.
Yeah, just had one last week. It happened. Somebody rear-ended. They actually hit the paramedic car, who then got pushed into the fire chief's vehicle. So, you know, side of the road, it's, you know, it's always dangerous there. You know that. Yeah. And like you said, calming the scene is definitely the way to go. I'm a big fan of the green light, too. The green is unbelievable.
We've been doing that on all their DPW stuff. I just find, like, to his point about, you know, getting the manufacturers on board. I mean, just what I, the last, truck that I was on a committee for was a tanker, Pierce, and what I had to do to get them to at least even get the light heads synced up at that point in 2021 was extremely difficult.
Crazy, right?
You know, and then now we're talking just a couple years later, now they're putting full systems in trucks. So I'm happy that it's taken that leap.
It's progressing.
But for years, it was like, nope, you don't get a sync option. And if they do, they do it after the fact, and it's just a wire run around the truck that looks like you paid some kid down at Home Depot to do it. And it's like, you know.
And you're paying big money for these trucks, too. Yeah. It's not like they're cheap.
No.
Right? Fire truck's not cheap nowadays. So, but, yeah, I mean, they always had their proprietary systems that they always used to use. So they always had their multiplex system that they would use. And they didn't want to integrate it with anybody else's system.
Right.
So that was your fight, right?
But the funny thing is if you look at their multiplex system, it's the same as a node or an expansion module. It's literally the same thing. It's just got a different name to it. Which is funny.
Yeah.
But it was like pulling teeth. But now it's like there's such a push for it. Now they're like, oh, maybe this is a good idea. Let's get on board with it.
This is good.
We've been saying this for years.
Because after you said it and 5,000 other people said it, again, it takes retooling time. It takes time for them to make a change, especially big companies like that.
Yeah.
But they finally did do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have to. Everybody has to look at the industry as a whole and. Like you were saying earlier, Derek, it's like, you know, you have those guys that are there that are just, they're going to run wires. They're going to pay a guy $10 an hour to run wires, whatever way they can, get out the cheapest way, you know, pull the little switch, turn it on. You know, it's going to be one toggle switch. It's going to turn all your lights, turn it all off, and they don't care. And there's other people that are going to say, hey, listen, you're going to want, you're going to want different phases so that if, you know, you're behind somebody, you don't want to light them up, you know, in front of you, certain, you know, all kinds of different scenarios that you go through. And unfortunately, the industry really just, you know, everybody in the industry needs to come together and say, listen, this is the standard, you know, and there's really no industry standards because we're kind of in an industry that doesn't have like, you know, even like the tow groups and stuff like that. They have these big industry, you know, where they kind of come out with some guidelines.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have different guidelines in every state. Right? Yeah. Every state has, I mean, you guys run what color on fire trucks?
Red.
Red. Red, some run blue.
Some run red, blue. Some think that they're police cars. Some.
I mean, so we run red, blue here. We're supposed to run really all red.
Yeah.
Red, blue is reserved for police in New Jersey. Yeah. Like
a lot of times we put blue to the rear because, you know, visually blue is seen from a distance. But now green is even better.
Yeah.
You know, green's at that too. And people keep asking, like, why do you keep putting green on vehicles? Because that's for state DOT. But amber's been so heavily used over the years in the plow market and the tow market, people don't pay attention to amber anymore.
Yeah.
Now they're getting this green light and they're like, what's this?
And it's bright.
You know, and they're paying attention. You know, one thing, like, I'll say, like, in Connecticut, the Connecticut State Police have definitely been on the forefront of synchronization and calming the scene. And you can see it throughout their whole fleet, even in different generations, throughout all their systems they've used. They've really maintained that trend of getting everything the same. So when you get five cars on a call, they're all doing the same thing. You can understand, you see what they're doing, and then you get this one department that shows up, and they're, you know, still like looking like it's drive mode. It's got white flashing to the rear and park, and you know, but that's
because they have two toggle switches that they flip to turn on.
And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take larger departments and larger cities to really push the industry to that. So once the bigger cities get on board and say, this is what we're going to start doing, people are going to be like, oh, this city, you know, you talk about training and stuff like Phoenix Fire, you know, what they were doing for training and fire, that got the whole country looking at them. So in our industry, it's what it's going to take. It's just larger cities to get on board with that, or larger state agencies to say, this is what the standard should be, and, you know, keep pushing that agenda.
Yeah, well, Michigan was always in the forefront of that, right?
Because
that's where a lot of these, you know, Michigan State Police always did the
that bubblegum light.
We got one.
Yeah.
It's going to go up here.
Oh, is it going
to
go here?
Yeah, we got one. We were able to get our hands on one.
That's awesome.
We had to know a lot of people to get one because they don't like to. They don't want to release that outside of Michigan. Yeah. But
well, two of them ended up in Albany.
So yeah, because everybody's pushing the retro look, right? And everybody wants that retro.
But it's a nostalgic look, but they brought it into the 21st century, and it's, you know, it's bright and you know it's a Michigan State Police car, but it does all the stuff that we're pushing for as an industry. It does all the overrides and the park kill and all that stuff. It's not just a bubblegum light anymore.
Yeah, but that thing used to rotate
real
slow too.
Yeah. Yeah, in wintertime it was even worse.
Yeah, it was like it was worse than a searchlight, right?
I have a Wayland 884 halogen that I was gonna try to mount on our forklift that we have, you know, one of those four halogen things. That, you know, it goes just fast enough that it's obnoxious, but.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I remember the old dash. I had a dash laser when I first started. It was louder in the car. Like you had to turn the music up because what you hear is.
I like the Stroh power supplies. It was a Medicar, and one day we opened up the back of the ambulance, and you could hear the power supplies like clicking. The light bar like clicking. I'm like, can you turn your car off? Like I can't hear myself think. Yeah,
click, 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 click. Because it was. I mean, strobes. How much power did they use?
Oh yeah,
they used like, a ton of power to fire those heads.
You know, if it was a 4-channel 50-watt, or you know,
I think I remember at the shop one day I was up there and Ryan was drilling into something and he drilled into one of those wires that was live.
I'll let you up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had an exciting day.
It was a little warm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But
strobes were great. They, you know, they had their time and their place. And then LED was so expensive when it first started. Now it's like LED is so cheap. And
well, I mean, it's still pretty expensive.
Yeah, but yeah. You remember like the first edition, yeah. you know, LED warning lights.
Yes.
They were like $500 for a dash light.
I remember the mini light bar was like $1,000. Yeah. It was like $999 for a mini light bar. It was crazy.
It's amazing to see what it is, but
yeah, well, certain parts of the industry prices come down and certain parts of the industry prices go up.
And that post COVID thing, everything's every year it's 7 to 16% increases across the board. And you know, people come in and they're looking for stuff, and it's, hey, I got this budget. I got a truck, and I got this budget, and I want all this stuff. It's like, you should have came to talk to me before because you need some more money. This is just going to cover your lights. This isn't even going to cover all the other extra stuff you want.
Yeah, by the time you add
a slide, a cabinet, a console, I want, you know.
Well, when you tell somebody.
A weather station, you know, it's, you know, there's another $20,000 on
drone deployment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Light towers.
Drones are, you know, $20,000, $30,000 alone for the drone. You know, it's, you have to have a robust budget to.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And some of the cities are getting good money for drones, and they're getting the, you know, it depends on what city you're in and where you are. But they have a great place in the fire service. I mean, especially big industrial buildings, these large Amazon-style warehouses and stuff like that. You can send a drone in, and you can cover a lot more ground safely than you can with firefighters.
Right. Yeah, and the situational awareness drones, so like tethered ones. I'm, you know, looking at getting a demo of one of those just to see, because I think that, you know, from a command post standpoint, it's great because you can set it, forget it, you know, you can do your thing, and it gives you a good overview with thermal capabilities. You know, who would have thought, you know, 10 years ago we were talking about, you know, drones and all this stuff.
If you were talking about a pull-out command board in the back of a vehicle, it didn't have a TV screen.
No.
Yeah.
We're doing multiple TV screens.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, we got one that's, you know, for the computer, for the accountability. There's another one for the drone, and there's another one for this, and it's, you know,
another one for callbacks. So you try to get more staff to come back. Yeah. It's wild.
But it's
a mobile office, really.
But it's the services change. You used to just go to a fire call and go, you know, and then you were done. And now it's, you know, you're doing different functions. You're doing fire rescue. You're doing public service. Your service. You're doing public safety. And now you're, you know, having to run your department out of one of those.
And that's.
Then you look at it from our standpoint as the upfitter. Now you got to be an IT guy. You got to figure out how all these systems integrate with one another.
Or you got to hire somebody else that can handle that for you, right? You got to fill that role.
Yeah.
And they're not easy roles to find people to fill.
No.
No.
Because it's a niche. It's a niche market.
Yeah.
You know, and unless you're doing, you know, vehicles with TV screens and all the extra computers and all that stuff, and said, you know, doing, you know, 20 or 30 of those a year, you know, how do you hire somebody to do that, you know, to do that role when you're not at that point yet? You know what I mean?
And
you got to sub somebody in and then trust that their work's good. And, you know,
there's a lot of factors. Yeah. And that's again, where those support groups for the, you know, where guys know, because there may be guys that have been dealing with it for a couple of years.
Phone a friend, man. It's,
it's
very helpful in this industry.
Absolutely. So, but it's all changing and it's ever changing. And I think, you know, we'll sit down again, and you know, a year and a half from now, and have a discussion. It'll be like, "Hey, did you see that? You know, it's going to change again."
Right.
But you know, the couple constants right now are what? The price of everything's going up. The price of vehicles is going up. Yeah. I mean,
and the jobs are coming in because people either have money left over from ARPA or things are going good for them, and they're spending.
You have to have vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have police cars. You have to have EMS vehicles. You have to have fire trucks. You know, without them, You can't do the essential jobs that need to be done.
We just purchased three trucks. 2022, we purchased three trucks, two command vehicles and a pickup truck. Just purchased two more Tahoes and another pickup truck. A fire apparatus is $1.2 million for an engine now.
It's insane. You
know,
I'd
rather the guys go out in the storms in a pickup truck, you know, a couple of guys, and if they bang up, you know, a $60,000 pickup truck, you know, with another $40,000 in upfitting on it. But, you know, I'd rather beat that up than a $1.2 million truck that's going to take 5 years to repair, you know, to get a new one, you know, replace it. So, you know, it's
plus it's wear and tear, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times you run out to the BS call where you could probably send one engine and a ladder, and then you could just follow manpower up with you know, a pickup truck. And the other thing too is, when you got younger guys on a department, you can start them off, and at least you can get manpower there. So somebody can get a pickup truck there, and maybe it's got at least a couple things on it that you might need.
That's another huge topic is the young guys in the fire service, and you can't drive a fire apparatus until you're 21. But now a lot of these departments where they have these younger guys, college kids that are, you know, 18, 19, they can't drive the fire apparatus, they're buying mini pumpers. You know, F-550, you're getting the truck out, you got water, you got a pump. But you're guaranteeing you get a truck on the air with all the equipment you need on it, and it's going to suffice for the time being.
At least get you started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know our insurance was always like that, too. You know, you got to be 21,
They can drive the ambulances, they can drive the pickup trucks, they can drive the brush truck, and guess what? We need all those on the calls anyways.
Just get them there.
But yeah, the mini pumper is making like its resurgence. It was like a hot little item for a while.
Now they're calling it a quick attack.
Yeah,
it's a quick attack.
But it's
just change the name.
Sold the spin.
But it's,
just
but it's
put a
making,
different spin on it.
And people are getting them within 6 to 9 months. You're not waiting years to get a full on custom pumper.
And you're not paying
millions. You're paying that money. You're paying $500,000 for one of those instead of, you know, 1.2.
We're buying
an ambulance that's like all in $600,000. I never thought I'd be spending it.
Ambulance used to be $175,000.
Yeah, I know, like $600,000 is like, you know, that's all the, you know, the stretcher and all the power load stuff and radios, but it's mind-boggling to see like how much that is. People are like, a police car costs how much now? Like, yeah. Well,
how about when somebody comes to you for a command vehicle and they say, I need a vehicle fully outfitted, what's it going to cost? And you say, around $100,000. They go, what?
Yeah.
But that's 90 to 100,000.
Not when you're looking at 50 to 60 for a pickup.
Yep.
Another 5 for a cab, and then you got the upfitting, the cabin, and all that stuff. You know, 100 to 110 is a good conservative number.
Yep.
But that's not including you buying, you know, another $20,000 of the radios
and equipment to go in it. Yeah. I mean, who would have ever thought that a mobile radio is $10,000+ for, you know, a radio? Never in my wildest dreams. I mean.
And it's technology, right? Because as technology gets better, right, your prices usually drop on certain things.
Yeah.
But radios is one of those things that's the price keeps going up.
But, you know, once again, the post-COVID thing, you know, chip shortages and everybody in the whole industry felt that.
Yep.
You know, it's,
that's true.
We're still getting stuff replaced from 2022, though. There are chip shortages stuff. We're finally getting heated steering wheels on stuff again.
We just had to pull a cabinet out of the back of a Tahoe that we built in, what was that, 21?
That was 21.
Late 21. Because it had a recall on it from Chevy that it got assembled without the backup sensor module in it. Well, they put a module in it, but it didn't have any of the internals in it. So it had to get swapped out and reprogrammed. But the dealer wouldn't touch it, so they brought it to us. We had to pull the cabinet back
out of it.
So they could bring it over there and put the new module in it and reprogram it and send them on the road.
So they put a dummy box in it.
They put a dummy module in it, but it was big. But you throw this giant cabinet in there, and they're like, oh, we can't touch that. Don't worry, I got you. We're fine. We'll take care of it.
You know, it's funny. You know, who would have thought a little chip thing is going to, you know, down the road. Oh, yeah, the backup sensors never worked since we got it. But then they got a recall notice from Chevy in the mail that said, oh, by the way, your vehicle falls under this. And that's why it doesn't work, you know.
As long as I have my heated seats.
That's
heated steering wheel is nice, though. That is a nice feature.
It is nice. You know, when you ask these people to bend over backwards for you and go on all these calls, like, why didn't you just buy a work truck? Why'd you spend the extra? First off, the LT was a smidge more. Like, they get the little creature comfort. So when they're sitting out on the side of the road at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's snowing. At least they're comfortable. You know, they're not in bed. Yeah. Give them a nice radio, give them a nice heated seat, and, you know, they'll be happy.
True. True. So.
Cup of coffee, I'll be fine.
As long as it's good coffee. That's it. Can't be cold.
I mean, if it's, I'll drink whatever. It's fine. Oh. Coffee's coffee at
yeah,
this
you
point.
Yeah, you just
coffee's coffee at this point.
He just mainlines coffee.
I don't know.
It's like it's his job.
Oh, yeah.
Every last winter, it was like, oh, we got rid of the Keurig. I need a 12-pot coffee machine. Here you go.
What do you like, the barista? The shop barista?
Yeah, I mean, finally got an espresso machine at the house. The wife let me get one of those, so.
I got one of those, too. They're fantastic.
Oh, it's lovely. Oh. Yeah. I love making my lattes. It's great.
I had two double espressos last week, though, at like 6 p.m.
How'd that work out? I'm sure that went out swimmingly.
Well, it was good because I had a lot of work to catch up on, yeah. So, you know, I was having the jitters in front of my computer screen for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, before you go into work one morning to see how that goes.
I'm going to give it to Ryan one morning. And the dogs.
Yeah.
I get the dog. I get both of the dogs, too.
Every time we show, the dogs went after Nick last time. He was like, oh, they're like, oh, there's a new person here. They just all went right to him. He just like, I was like, just go sit there and just pet Jameson. He's fine. Just,
yeah, poor Jameson. He's getting older.
Yeah. He's totally content, though. He's like, I like this guy. I'm just going to rub up against him. And...
Yeah, well, because if you pay him attention, it's just like, he's not going to leave you alone.
No.
So.
Yeah. It's nice going to see shop dogs.
Yeah. That's one of the great things that we like about you guys being so close. It's nice to be able to, all right, we got to go pick up a bunch of stuff down at First End. You know, let's hop a ride, go down there. Gets you out of the shop for a couple hours.
You find a good meal on the way. There's got to be something between.
Not really.
There's nothing between us.
The Burger King's pretty decent. At least it's fast.
If you got to get in and out, I guess.
You know, every time I've ever been down to the shop and asked the guys, and they all look like they can eat. I said,
there's a couple that aren't missing meals. I know. Right. I was like, we got a couple like Nick, though.
There's got to be a good deli around here. And it's, nobody ever gives us points us in any direction.
We're in northern New Jersey. There's a ton of delis around here.
Well, we want one on a recommendation, and nobody gives
us. So we're coming back down in like 2-3 weeks to get our cabinets, hopefully. So give us a good deli, and then we can.
Yeah, we'll do it off the air. We'll talk about it.
We'll do a nice review for you.
Know? So we'll talk about a couple places. What week are you supposed to be down? Do you know?
It's gonna be
October 3rd.
Yeah.
I'm around that week. Yeah. I'll be around that week. I'm traveling the week after. So
that's gonna be it's a big pickup order. It's 3 full cabinets and then some.
Yeah, that's so
what are you bringing? What are you bringing? 18 wheeler down with you?
Oh, we're gonna need
pretty much.
Yeah, we got. We're gonna need a 26-foot box truck and some slides. So we got some beds, two bed slides, 3 cabinets, some consoles. Yeah. Mm.
Good. Keep them rolling out the door. Right.
Yeah,
I just dropped in another PO before we left.
This customer saw you guys at FDIC and saw the product and was like, "Dude, we want this."
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, we talked to a lot of people at FDIC the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah. I think that was a huge one for you guys. It's
a big show. It's an expensive show.
It's a lot.
It's a long show. It's a lot of time. It's, you know, it's not easy driving the vehicles out there.
No.
You know, but it is the fire show, right? You know, as far as they go, and then there's some
It used to be like the Firehouse Expo when they used to do that in Baltimore. I was, you know.
Yeah, and then they went to Nashville, and the first 2 years at Nashville were great. And then, you know, everybody's like, okay, I've been to Nashville. They got to keep moving those shows around.
Yeah.
Because if they do, and they go to different cities, at least there's different things to do.
Right.
But, you know, people like go to Nashville, and the first couple of years it was great. And then after that, it's like, you know, everybody, you know, the same guys aren't going to want to go back because they've already been there twice.
They want to see something different.
They want to see something different, exactly. So.
We're doing Foxwoods in October with the Fire EMS Pro. So,
that'll be our first big trade show. It's going to be,
and that's grown over the past few years. They've put out a really good show.
Yeah, they said numbers on this one almost double.
Yeah, they've been increasing their size. So it's a good show. So
that's
we're excited to that, and you know, networks with some other people.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you guys coming down. Thank you for coming down today. So if you need anything, you're up in Connecticut. Mike, Derek, Nick, not our Nick, Precision Mobile Electronics. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us.